Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, we have the next in our series of leaders' interviews ahead of the general election next week. And I'm joined now on the line by Mary Lou MacDonald, leader of Sinn Féin and candidate in Dublin Central. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for being with us. Now, we know you're putting yourself forward as a potential Taoiseach, saying that you're ready for office, but your manifesto wasn't ready until Tuesday of this week. And we know you've been telling us here and saying it elsewhere too, you've been ready since 2020, you say, for a general election, but your plan wasn't ready until this week. Why?
Well, Claire, as you say, we launched our manifesto on Tuesday. Your listeners, I'm sure, will be aware that over the summer months, we have launched very considered, very detailed proposals in everything from international protection and immigration, mental health, affordable housing, a five-year housing plan, a five-year health strategy, a plan, a deliverable plan for early education and childcare. So I would say that, in fact, Sinn Féin has been the most active party in setting out our stall, our policy stall, fairly consistently. And actually,
so the late manifesto was a tactic. That's what you're saying?
No, it wasn't. It was. Our launch, by the way, coincided with many other parties also launching their manifestos. And I think those that are raising the issue of the lateness, as they have it, of our manifesto, only had launched theirs the day or 2 days previous to it. So no, it's part of the campaign calendar. Mm-hmm. I think, in fact, if I'm not wrong, we launched our manifesto in this general election campaign earlier than in the last.
Well,
I
think that's what people would expect, because you have been saying since 2020 that it's time for a general election. I've been taking a look at your social media videos of you on the campaign trail, and you meet people, they tell you your stories, they tell you what they feel they need, and you tell them what they can expect. You say, well, that's going to change when we're in, you know, whether it's housing, help with disabilities, whatever that might be. Is it time, though, to level with people and say there are some problems that we will not be in a position to solve?
Well, I have been extensively now travelling, meeting people, listening very carefully to what they have to say. And what you find, Claire, is the issues that are being raised in the course of this campaign are what you would call very basic asks from people. Most notably, the ask to be able to afford a roof over their heads, the ask to have access to services that people rely on, and reflecting back then the reality of families that are still struggling with the cost of living crisis. And then, of course, you have conversations that are about the future and ambitions for the future and what all of that is going to mean. The big word that is now coming up again out on the canvas trail is the need for change and people weighing up that option. And look, I have never said to people that, you know, anybody has snap or overnight solutions. Actually, that's not what people are looking for. I think they're looking for a political party and a government that actually hears and understands what's happening on the ground,
who can
prioritise investment correctly.
I think it was,
and make the right calls.
Last night you were on Sheriff Street, isn't that right, for the switching on of the lights?
Yeah.
And I saw your speech there. You were talking to young people, saying you want them to stay in Ireland, you want them to make their lives here, which is what everybody would want to do. But do you not have to level with them and explain that if you narrow the tax base in the way that you plan to, that they'll be the ones who will need to pay for that? They'll have to work until they're 70 to make up the difference.
We have very much levelled with young people. And actually, the remarks I was making, I think, were in DCU to students. Actually, I was making the same remarks to cohorts of young people throughout the day. And let's level with this. We need our young people to be given the opportunity to build their lives, their futures, and to make their contribution at home. If they travel, and travel is a good thing, that is fantastic. It broadens experience. Okay, but on the, it's on, a good
but,
and healthy
there's
thing.
A consequence to narrowing, there's a consequence to narrowing the tax base. That is my point.
Well, I would say to you that our taxation proposals are balanced and fair. They're targeted. Our proposal, for example, on the USC to take the first €45,000 of every worker's income out of that tax, which, remember, was an emergency tax when Fianna Fáil crashed the economy.
That's going to cost €2 billion in revenue to the state.
It's going to cost 1.8, and I think that that is a necessary and a very, very fair relief for middle income and lower income workers in particular. You see, other political parties will make other choices. They will choose to give big tax relief to landlords. They will choose to give big tax reliefs for gold-plated pensions. They're not the choices we're making. We're making choices that are very explicitly aimed at working families, working people, who we know need
breathing room. You can't just compare the choices, because what you're planning to do is spend €4 billion more next year than is proposed by the outgoing government. So it's additional spending. And Piers Doherty said that would be paid for by a growing economy in the coming years. Now, what happens if the economy doesn't grow in the coming years?
Well, let me just make this point. Firstly, just to finish out on the young people, the big consequence of us not speaking directly to our young people, not doing things like Sinn Féin has proposed, like, for example, a job guarantee for our health graduates. If we don't do those things, we miss the energy, the productivity of that generation. And places, far-flung places, get the benefit from that. We graduate and we educate the best and the brightest. It is my strong and firm view that one of the first duties of the next government is to ensure that we turn things around and we offer that generation of people their chance to live, to work and to thrive.
What I'm saying to you is you have to be realistic too, and you have to foresee Donald Trump coming into the White House, the prospect of tariffs. What happens if bad things happen to our economy? You won't be able to do all of these things that you're promising.
And our programme and our proposals are balanced, they're sensible, and they have taken account of risk.
They rely, Piers Doherty, your finance spokesperson, says they rely on the economy growing in the coming years. My question is, what is the plan if that doesn't happen?
So our figures and our plan are based on the numbers and the forecasting from the Department of Finance, just like every other party. Where we differ is the decisions that we make in terms of where it is necessary to invest. We will run surpluses over a 5-year term of government that will amount to €15 billion. Those will be set aside in a rainy day fund. That is prudent. That is a necessary thing. But the most prudent thing, when you reference risk that might emerge internationally from the new Trump presidency, for example, the best way to mitigate risk to our economy, the best way to ensure our potential for further growth, is to invest in infrastructure. The main issue that has been raised, Claire, with us, with Pierce, with me and others over the last number of years, from investors in Ireland, those looking at Ireland as a potential investment location, is the absence of housing. That has been raised again and again. And the best way to de-risk all of the myriad of international factors at play is to make sure that we here are match fit. And that means big infrastructural investment, which, of course, we can use our windfall taxes for. You don't use those taxes for ongoing service provision and for your current spend.
And the other people who want to be Taoiseach are saying exactly the same thing about infrastructure. But Micheál Martin told us on this programme that some of the promises in all of the manifestos might have to bite the dust if Donald Trump goes ahead with these tariffs on our goods and services. Are you prepared to tell your voters the same? There are some things we may not be able to do if things change.
Well, what I'm saying, and I think everybody needs to acknowledge, is that the housing crisis can't continue. This isn't an optional extra, Claire. the type of investment.
So you would allow the country
to
go into a deficit rather than making cuts to your spending plans?
That will not prove necessary. Let me just repeat, people have to have a secure, affordable roof over their head. That is a necessary matter. It's not a luxury extra in a society. We have to get to grips with this. Our society is hurting. Our economy is already hurting. It will hurt more unless we get on top of that. On the Trump presidency, let me make just this point. He's been in office before. When he was in the White House before, corporate tax receipts, in fact, grew quite substantially. Can we count on that happening necessarily again? No, we can't. Do we need to be aware of the risks attendant with the new presidency? Absolutely. But I think we also need to be careful not at this point to start talking up a doomsday scenario. Mm-hmm. And if it happens, let's imagine it happens, that there are further tariffs. Just remember, American business, America, the United States, will want access to the European market. Ireland, this place, is a gateway to that market. Yeah, that's not going to change.
That is the hope, our workforce. There is an unknown there. But just going back to your own plans, this narrowing of the tax base, like getting rid of USC for all earnings under 45,000 and getting rid of the local property tax, like you won't be able to do that and fix all of the problems that you're telling those people out in the canvas trail you're going to fix.
But Claire, we're at a point where we have very, very considerable resources. We are not always going to be in this position, but as we're speaking today and as this election is happening, this is where we are at. We have the resources to invest in infrastructure, to invest in housing, and we have the cash flow to invest better and smarter in service provision. Mm. Everything, you see, the figures are run and the forecasts are made. Every political party and every manifesto is working from the same figures because they're not plucked from the sky. They're provided by the Department of Finance. And the issue then is, how much do you spend? Where do you spend it? Where do you make the investment? And I think one of the big challenges for government is to make sure that you return to government people who are savvy, who know the value of public money, the value of taxpayers' money, and who will make thoughtful, prioritised and disciplined investment
decisions.
Well, I
think that is why. But that is why I think there is a value. There's a value for you in telling people, I'm thinking strategically here. I have a plan if things go wrong, if Donald Trump goes ahead with his tariffs or if there is another economic shock. And here's what we will do. But you're not saying that to me. You're saying we have to fix housing. So come what may, we will spend what we're committing to spend today on housing. We're not going to change tack.
So with all due respect to Micheál Martin, I would not credit saying to people who can't get an entire generation of people locked out of housing that it is strategically wise to say to them that, in fact, if things don't go as I envisage them, we're not going to build the house that you need. That to me is not an option, to be frank.
That's not what he said. He said there are commitments in all manifestos that will not be honoured, cannot be honoured, that will have to be dropped if things change across the board. These are the goodies I think he's talking about here, not the essentials. But you're saying, come what may, we will spend what we're telling you we're going to spend in this manifesto.
We have forecasts, not just for this year or next, but over the next number of years. And the very prudent, risk-tested forecasts from the department, not from me, reflect an expected surplus to be run at about 8 or 9 billion euros per annum. The issue here isn't a short-term concern that we're going to wake up in the morning and the cupboard is bare. That's not the concern. The resource is there and it is considerable. And let me repeat, that means that we need to be very, very thoughtful and smart and prioritise where that money needs to get spent. In the event, Claire, that in the world of international diplomacy and trade, whoever leads the next government has to navigate that very, very carefully. Okay. And our opening assumption with the Trump presidency should not be an automatic assumption of conflict and of negative fallout. We will have to engage the new administration in a constructive way and, of course, protect at every turn Irish economic interests.
Now,
that
you
is
want
the
to,
job and the duty
okay.
of the new
government. You want to freeze the carbon tax. That's projected to bring in an average of $1 billion a year by 2030, and it's ring-fenced for climate measures. Pascal Donoghue said reducing excise on petrol and diesel is 1970s thinking. It's foolish in the face of a climate crisis to stall carbon taxes. So are you guilty of 1970s thinking in this regard?
Far from it. In the course of the last term of government, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael increased a tank of petrol and diesel by about 12 euros. They intend, if they return to government, to ratchet that up by another 7 or 8 euros. The net effect of that has not been a reduction in consumption of petrol or diesel. In fact, on the most recent figures that I got from 2022 to 2023, there was in fact an increase in petrol and diesel consumption. So let's just say that. Secondly, what has had effect is huge pressure on people who rely on their car, particularly in communities that do not have access to public transport, and they are very, very many right across.
But there is
right
a fund there
the
as a result, ring fenced for climate change, for retrofitting houses, for putting in retrofitting measures into people's houses who are entitled to it for free, which I'm sure you're in favour of. That's
so
what that money is used for, carbon tax.
The money is not ring fenced, and the Comptroller and Auditor General was very, very clear on that. As much as almost half of those monies could not be accounted for where they went. They go back
I think,
into
in
the
fairness
general
to you,
fund.
I think you're right to an extent, but it was 39%. So 61%
okay.
of it went to ring-fenced climate
okay.
change funds, including retrofitting for people who are in receipt of social welfare payments, which I'm sure you'd welcome. So how do you replace that money?
So as I say, the monies in are not ring-fenced as reflected by the Comptroller. On the issue of retrofitting, there's two things here that need to be improved. The first is the Warmer Home Scheme. That needs more investment. I think everybody has acknowledged that people wait and wait and wait. In fact, many of us have dealt with constituents who have passed on, who have died, and we're still waiting for access to that scheme. And then the retrofitting scheme, the problem with the design on that currently is that if you want to avail of it, you have to come up with as much as 25, 30,000
okay.
euros.
So there are
it's a 50-50 scheme.
And we all know,
so
we've talked about it here in this programme. Mary Lou, we know there are problems with that scheme. If you do what you want with carbon tax, there won't be the money to do any retrofitting. So how much will it cost and how will you replace that money?
So just to repeat to you, we have, and I'm reaching for my figure
well, will,
now.
Will the retrofitting moment. Scheme end if you do what you wish to do with carbon tax?
No, the retrofitting scheme will not end. What we are looking to do is to make sure that it's a tiered payment. So if your means are that you cannot come up with 50% of the money that you require to have your home retrofitted, and we need to retrofit homes right across the state,
yeah.
you will get
but you now,
will get,
but you now don't have the money.
You
don't have the money to do that because you've got rid of the carbon tax.
Sorry, Claire, there's 7 billion already pre-committed to retrofitting under the National Development Plan by 2030. The resources are there. The scheme has to be designed in a way that people can access it. One of the other innovations that we want to bring is the scheme for houses that use homes that use solid fuels. These are up to a third of homes, the further west actually that you move across the island. And currently there's no access to the retrofitting scheme for those homes. And they tend to be the poorest homes, the coldest
okay,
homes.
Okay, so you've identified the problem,
the
but you can see my point. But if you stall the increases in carbon tax, you're left with a deficit in that area. And how do you fill the gap?
Claire, we're not left with the deficit. I've said to you now several times that our programme does not create a deficit. As a matter of fact, we end up running a surplus every year over the 5 years term of government to the tune of 15 billion euros.
Okay, well, let's look.
We are not into running a deficit.
Well, let's look at spending in another area. So from your manifesto, you want to offer 100% redress to everyone affected by building defects. The current government scheme covers defective apartments built between the years 91 and 2013. That's going to cost 2.5 billion euro just for that. Apartments built between those years. So how much will your broader expanded scheme cost, the 100%?
So, and of course, everybody who lives with this, whether it's, you know, block defects, whether it's...
We know what the problem is. How much is it going to cost?
So we have ring-fenced, so far, 1 billion euros from the Apple Fund to contribute by way of additional spend. This is additional to what
it won't touch the sides of it. It won't touch the sides of it.
That's by way of additional spend to what the government has already committed. We have recognised, and I've met families in Donegal, in Mayo, people living here in Dublin who live with the reality of these defective buildings and the consequences of them. By the way, families who did nothing wrong. The issue is around oversight and regulation.
I know. I take that point. They did nothing wrong. But you can't promise a blank check either. And you don't have a figure for what it's going to cost to provide 100% redress to everyone affected by building defects.
And the reason why you cannot be given a singular figure is it's going to cost a substantial amount of money. I have said that to you. The government have allocated or said 2.5 billion. We have allocated an additional billion from the Apple funds. We accept that it may cost more than that. It will be a demand-led scheme. But let me say this. You cannot simply leave families and communities in the lurch where literally, in cases, their homes are literally have crumbled around them. Those homes have to be replaced. The families.
Okay, so that's another spending commitment that come what may, you'll spend whatever is required to provide redress to 100% of people affected.
We have made that commitment and we will meet that commitment. And we believe that. And by the way, these are one-off expenditures. We talked there about windfall taxes and how they are used and investment in infrastructure. This is one of these one-off spends that the state has to meet because the state failed these families.
Okay. Are people linking the housing crisis to immigration? Is that what they're saying to you?
Some people are, yes. I think more broadly, people are linking just the issue in particular of international protection and how that is being mismanaged.
To the housing crisis?
People, when they're under pressure, Claire, sort of look around their own environment and their own lived experience. Those that are struggling to keep up with the rent or who don't have a roof over their head, particularly in poorer communities.
Mm-hmm. And what do you say to them when they link people seeking asylum to the housing crisis? Like, do you agree with them?
I have always been clear with people that those who are responsible for the crisis in housing and the crisis in health and beyond that are those who are in government. That is the open and shut fact of the matter. I think the government have added to pressure within communities and actually drove to some extent a bad feeling that could have been avoided because they have hopelessly mismanaged the issue, in particular of international protection. I think more widely care on the issue of migration and people coming and living and working here. I think everybody understands, everybody who's had to use a hospital, for example, knows that without nurses from the Philippines and doctors from the Middle East, that our services would be in big, big trouble. So I don't detect attention on that score at all. Mm-hmm. But there is an issue around the issue of particularly the placement of international protection centres, the lack of
and that's why we know you said they should only be placed in affluent areas. Can you define an affluent area for us?
Well, I said something. This is actually what we have said, and let me repeat it. Centres should not be placed in communities that are struggling just to get by, and in some areas that aren't getting by, that don't have proper service provision, and in many cases that live in poverty. Mm-hmm. They should not go there.
Listen, some of your candidates couldn't go into certain areas during the local and European election campaign this year. We saw that on social media. Are there some places where you and your candidates can't go now? This was off the back of your response to the riots.
No, we have been canvassing right across the country, and it has been so far a very interesting, a very warm campaign. And I've detected over the last week or so that the energy is really back in the campaign. And I think at this juncture, people are assessing what their options are. And we're now really in the make your mind up phase. But it's been a very friendly and a very welcoming and a very interesting campaign.
So there aren't any places that your candidates can't go. Is that what you're saying?
Precisely, yes.
So do you acknowledge that you got your response to the riots wrong then? Because people at that time were looking for a unifying voice, you know, a moment for people to come together. Bertie Ahern said this, a man who won three elections back to back. Whatever you might think about his politics, Mary Lou, I mean, he did politics well in that he was successful. He said you got your response wrong and that your traditional supporters deserted you.
Well, the riots in question happened in the middle of my constituency. And what happened in Dublin was just the most dramatic reflection that, you know, that the government have gotten things drastically wrong. I was on site early in the day when all of this was kicking off.
But do you acknowledge that you got your response wrong in calling for the minister and the Garda commissioner to go that day?
Well, that people might have that view. I called it as I saw it at that time. Okay. What happened in the city was utterly, utterly disgraceful. I have never seen the like of it, and I hope that I will never, ever see the light of
this
again.
I want to move on. You want a review of RTE's coverage of the conflict in Gaza. Now, we know Commissioner Newman already investigates broadcasts for balance and fairness if they get complaints from listeners and viewers. Has Sinn Féin ever complained to Commissioner Newman, or have you ever complained about RTE's coverage of the situation in the Middle East?
No, I haven't. And our proposal, we're conscious, Claire, that the national broadcaster occupies a very particular space, not just in the media landscape here, but in Irish society. It has to be the gold standard, the most trusted source of information.
So what are the particular broadcasts that Sinn Féin feels were unfair or unbalanced when it comes to Gaza?
Well, we're not directing this at any particular broadcast, and we're not making any particular value judgment on matters.
Can I suggest to you that the fact that you're not telling us the particulars is the problem? You're pointing an ambiguous finger at journalists and editors in this place, and it is outrageously unfair that you cannot tell us why you have decided to do that.
When the controversies around RTE and certain aspects of management and governance kicked off, there was agreement, I think, of the need to overhaul governance within the organisation. That wasn't pointing fingers necessarily at people who work in RTE. It was just a reflection of the fact that you have to have public confidence in an organisation that's in receipt.
But you are suggesting that there are people in this place who are producing reports about the conflict in Gaza that are not balanced and that are not fair. I mean, you know that this is a challenging and polarising war. And you're putting journalists in here in a very, very difficult position by pointing the finger at them in this way.
Claire, the proposal is that a peer-led review carried out not by politicians, by journalists, by human rights experts, would be commissioned at arm's length from government, either by Commissioner Newman or by the RTE editorial board, because public confidence matters in the national broadcaster.
But who is saying that there isn't public confidence in what RTE broadcasts in relation to that conflict? Who is saying that?
So Claire, the BBC, for example, have carried out a similar process.
I've checked this because I heard David Cullinan saying this the other night, and I saw that you said it yesterday, so I checked it. The BBC reviewed one report by one reporter about a missile strike on the Ali Hospital, where the bomb was wrongly attributed to one side. And they clarified that there has been no independent review into what the BBC reports on Gaza. If that was called for through their structures, I'm sure there would be, as would happen here if a proper complaint was made to Commissioun Yaman, which is tasked with doing this. You still haven't told me the why.
Well, I don't accept that. I think I have told you the why. The why resides in the fact
well, you
that
haven't
in a
been
world
able to cite one report or a tally of unbalanced broadcasts, as you might see it, that mean or that point to the need for an independent review.
The BBC carried out a similar process in respect of coverage around immigration. So I'm simply making this point, and it is not to, I'm not preempting the outcome of anything, and I'm not pointing the finger at anybody, Claire. I am making, I think, just a very simple and a reasonable point for the national broadcaster, which is a pillar of Irish society, the quality of Irish democracy, public discourse in a world where we have 24/7 news, where you have information of very great quality and some of it, frankly, of dubious quality. Everything that can be done to ensure that there is public confidence in the governance arrangements of RTE and also in the quality of building trust and confidence in the quality of the information from RTE. I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
I think that's a positive thing. And to be honest with you, I'm not a journalist. I'm a political actor. But I think if I were, and if I were working in RTE, I would welcome every mechanism, every innovation that grew and developed trust and confidence in the national broadcaster, because it really matters. RTE matters in Irish life, public discourse, okay, political discourse, and so on.
All right. Well, listen, we move on because you did tell voters in 2020 it was time for change. You're repeating that message in 2024. Now, if the voters don't take you up on that and vote you into office this time, can you really come back in 2028 or 2029 with the same proposition?
Well, the same proposition now for a century has been Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, or Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. So the big change, and I think the big opportunity now, which wasn't, in fairness, evident at the time of the 2020 election, may have emerged from the election, but it wasn't evident in the election, is the opportunity for a government led by Sinn Féin, a government led by a party other than Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. You know, they've had a century. I think that's more than enough time, a century of chances. And when I'm talking to people out on the ground, Claire, all across the place, people see and understand the value, in many cases understand the urgency of making that change. So that's a proposition now.
Okay.
It is different. It is new. Not so long ago, I mean, a generation ago, politically, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael literally dominated government, dominated opposition. That's not the case now. Irish politics has changed. I think that's a really good thing.
Okay.
And we are saying to people in this election, you know, if you want to change the government, vote for Sinn Féin. We're also running 71 candidates, a record number of candidates for us. So we have enough people in the field.
All right,
if people
listen,
come out and back us.
All right,
we do need to
leave it there, and people can find a full list of candidates on rte.ie/constituencies. For now, Mary Lou MacDonald, leader of Sinn Féin, thank you for joining us on the programme.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.